Welcome, everyone, to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri with Beverly Cascaden and Chip Haley. Sponsored by the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome, everyone, to another exciting edition of Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Beverly Cascaden.
Well, good morning, Bev. Did you have a fabulous Mother's Day?
I had a fabulous Mother's Day. You know, when we're spread out all over the country, it's hard for families to get together anymore. But I was spending the day at my daughter's house that lives close by, and three granddaughters and my son-in-law, and then came home and worked in the garden. And so I was happy playing in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, isn't it always great to be able to get together with family on a special day like Mother's Day and just have a time together?
Yes. Yes. And reminisce, you know, different
things. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I put a bandana scarf on when I was in my early 20s, late teens. Having that red bandana on where it's tied in the back, you know, that was kind of a hip thing to do. I'm not going to say hippie, but hip thing to do. And so, memories. Good memories.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to bring on at this time our very special guest, and we're just so happy and delighted that she has graciously consented to be our special guest here today on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Belinda Turner, welcome to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri.
Good morning.
Good morning, Belinda. Hi. We're just so happy to have you this morning. And we're going to start off like we generally always do and have you talk to us about your vision loss. What was the cause or result? And so where are you at now with your vision loss?
I have no vision left at all. So I inherited my vision loss from my dad. He had cataracts on his eyes, and I inherited that, was born with them. My parents thought it was blanket fuzz they were seeing on my eyes when I was a baby, and they would take me to the doctor, and all the doctors told them, well, no, it's not blanket fuzz, but she will probably be blind before she ever starts school. Well, being a child, I don't remember having poor vision because you don't know that.
Right, right.
And when I was 5 years old, an aunt and uncle moved to Memphis, and they learned about a doctor down there that could do these surgeries and everything, because I came from a very small town. You didn't have those kind of doctors around.
Oh, yeah.
Marston. So we started going to Memphis and seeing this eye doctor, and he stated that he could do the surgery. So my cataracts were not on the front of my eye. They were on my retina. So this was a pretty intense surgery that I had. But when they did the surgery, they lost some fluid in my left eye. So when Lee Smith talked about only having one eye, I can relate to him, because after that, what I could see out of my left eye was just barely shadows.
Yeah.
So I really only had the one eye, and of course they fitted me for glasses, and they were like Coke bottles, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But as you wore all your life, and hey, you know, they were very irritating to wear. You wore sores on your nose and your ears and stuff. And I did not have very good vision. Matter of fact, I think I was really considered just barely above being legally blind, if not being legally blind. I went to a school, public school. I did not go to a school for the blind. But when I went to school, they didn't offer assistance to anyone with vision as low as mine or anything. I was treated just like anyone else. And I'm the only one in my family that had this. I have a brother 3 years older than me, and he didn't get it. And I had a sister. We lost her in 2019. She had no problem with her eyes either.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for sharing that. You mentioned the one brother and sister. The brother, does he live nearby?
He lives in Cape Girardeau. He's about 30 miles away.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so were those the only siblings that you had?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, and where did you actually call home initially?
Initially, home was in a very small town. That's another thing I could relate to that, Lee Smith. Very small town in southeast Missouri in the Boot Hill area of Missouri called Marston. It's M-A-R-S-T-O-N. And our population when I was a child was about 800.
Uh-huh.
Population now is half that.
Yeah.
But
wow.
Marston was a very small town, and we had a complete school there through high school when I was in the first and second grade. But when I became a third grader, they stopped the high school in Marston because, hey, when you only have four people graduate out of a senior class, you know, you don't mm-hmm. have a very big school. And they consolidated us with Lilburn, Missouri.
Yeah.
But I went to school there in Marston until I was through the eighth grade. And after that, we rode the bus to Lilburn to go to the high school.
Yeah. Okay. But all right. Yeah.
Marston was what they did in back then. There was no industries around. So Marston was surrounded by cotton fields and soybean fields. And so this is how the people made their living. And the land here in the Boot Hill in southeast Missouri area is as flat as it could be. You could see as far as you can see because there's no hills.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So did you pursue your education after high school?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I tried, you know, if y'all remember back then, I applied for a couple of jobs, local jobs around and everything. But if you remember back then, some applications you filled out, one of the last questions on it was, do you have any disabilities?
Uh-huh.
If so, list them.
Uh-huh.
Well, you almost knew that your application was going in file 13.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
No, I didn't and didn't have a job for a while. But then my brother married, and they had a child in 67, and that's the year I graduated. So I started taking care of their son.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Worked doing that. I kept him till he was nearly 3 years old. So.
Yeah, okay. And tell us, Belinda, where did you and your husband meet?
Oh, we met in Little Rock. I lived in Little Rock for about 28 years. I moved to Little Rock after I lost my sight, and the rehab counselors suggested that I go to what I called back then Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind, which, you know, Chip, is a vocational rehabilitation
right,
center.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
And after finishing there, I came back to Missouri and actually worked a job in Missouri. And then when I got hired as a long-distance operator, I moved back to Arkansas.
And yeah, yeah, okay.
There. Uh-huh. I met him in Little Rock.
Okay, and what was he doing at the time?
He drove a cab for the city of Little Rock.
Is that right? Okay, yeah.
Yes.
So
I guess who his passenger was.
Yeah, and got free. They were free cab rides.
No, they weren't free. You know, he always teased me. Bobby was he was just a good old country boy, but he loved to tease you and everything. So the first time, not the first time, but one of the times he was carrying me to work, he was teasing me about something. So when we got to work, I was going to pay him. Well, when he gave me back the change, he didn't count it out right, and he gave me back more than he should have. So after that, he had always teased me. Yeah, that first time I took you to the telephone company, I didn't get paid right. He didn't give me the right amount of money.
Well, I'm going to push it over to Bev here in just a second, but talk to us before I do that. But talk to us a little bit about your work history. What kind of things have you done?
Well, I've been pretty fortunate. The first job I had after leaving rehab, vocational rehab services in 76, I went to work for the state of Missouri at the DSS office, and that's what we used to commonly call the county welfare office.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a PBX operator for it, but it was in Crothersville, Missouri, and I lived in Marston. The job was 22 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And you didn't really want to live in Crothersville because it was known as a very rough town since they had a shipyard there. Mm. So I traveled to and from Crothersville every day, but after working there until the end of July of 78, I decided in January of 78 that I was going to leave this job. So I wrote the counselor and said, okay, I've had enough. I've got to move on and do something different. If you want this job for another visually impaired person, find them. I'll help mm-hmm. train them, but find them. So it didn't take them but 2 days to come see me and decide what we were going to do. And after that, I was home, and I knew the first lady that Southwestern Bell had hired as a long-distance operator, she had, there in Little Rock, and I knew her, she had left her job. So they were going to hire someone else, and so every 6 months you had to update your application. And I knew the guy who worked in the employment office, he was also visually impaired, but I kept updating my application. And the lady who trained her told him, if y'all want somebody here, you better get them here soon because I'm going to retire. So a friend of mine, she called me right after Christmas. She said, did you update your application? I said, oh, my God, Christmas, I forgot about it. She said, Jack McSpadden's looking for you. So I called him the next morning, and he did the same interview again, but he added a little more question to it. Well, okay. The end of that month, my mother was in the kitchen, and my sister came in, and they got started talking, and the phone rang, and it was this Jack McSpadden. Well, I'm sitting here waving at him to try to get him to touch. They just keep talking. He did a full-blown interview, and he said, the job's yours if you want it. I said, okay. So he told me when they wanted me there, so I became a long-distance operator for South Carolina.
Yeah, 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 awesome.
And that was in 1979, and I worked that until the end of December of, 1990. And they were moving to new equipment, and they claimed that it could not be modified for the visually impaired person. I think I still have a problem believing that. The only job they were going to move us to was in, it wasn't in Birmingham, Alabama. They said it was, but it was actually, the place was about 15 miles Riverside. It was outside of Birmingham. It was a relay operator. Do y'all know what a relay
yes,
operator
yeah, yeah,
is?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, we went down and looked at the job and everything, but we were going to have to take a cut and pay. Plus, if you had needed a cab, you had to call one from Birmingham. It was going to cost you $25 one way in a cab for anywhere you needed to go. So we didn't take the job.
Yeah.
So started applying for jobs. Well, after I left the telephone company, and, you know, never say never because you will eat those words. I got hired as the PBX switchboard operator for North Pulaski Department of Human Services, the county welfare office in North Little. So I ran their switchboard, and believe me, it was nothing like the one in Crothersville. This phone handled over 2,000 calls a day.
Wow. Wow.
Yes, I learned how to talk fast and get rid of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
And I went to work there in November of 91, and I worked it until January of 94. And the reason why I left it is I went from a $12.37 an hour job down to one that was paying $5 and a nickel.
Wow.
And I thought, if I'm ever going to go anywhere, I'm going to have to learn computers. Because, see, I didn't know computers.
Yeah.
That time, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I contacted a counselor, and he came and talked to me. He said, we don't usually help a person who has a job, but you look like you're going backwards, so we're going to help you. So I went back to, the name of it changed. It became Lions World Services for the Blind.
Yeah, yeah.
And I learned computers and everything, and I went and interviewed for a couple of jobs while I was there. But then, and this is what's funny. Then in the fall of that year, Southwest Airlines advertised on TV that they were going to build a call center in Little Rock and that you could pick up applications at the airport and stuff. So I told Bobby, that was my husband's name, I said, Bobby, when you're out at the airport today, I said, I want you to do something. He said, what? I said, I want you to go into the Southwest Airlines counter, and I want you to get me an application. I want to apply for a job for that call center that they have. And he said, well, what makes you think you're going to work for Southwest Airlines? I looked at him. I said, because I'm qualified.
Yes.
Good girl.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to work for him. And he said, okay. So he brought me the application, and the job placement lady at Lions World helped me fill it out, and we sent it in, and I got called for an interview, and I went to the interview, and you talked to two different people, but of course, these people were just interviewing you there in Little Rock. They sent the applications back to the human resources in Dallas. Well, I got a letter that says, we believe you have the right stuff, and we would like for you to come to work for us. And I took it to the job placement lady, and she said, let's call them and tell them who they've hired. And
yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
And they said, no matter what we have to do, she has a job. And
yeah.
She told them they had a computer programmer there at Lions World that could work with them. And he did, and I think he did a wonderful job because it was not an easy.
Yeah.
You know, website or anything.
Right,
but he
right.
The
yeah.
Program,
yeah.
The
yeah.
Program to match it.
Yeah.
So I worked at Southwest Airlines from. It took me a while to get there because he had to work several months with them, but I went to work there in October of 95 and worked until they closed that center in February of 2004.
Yeah,
and if I wanted to stay with Southwest, I had to go to somewhere like Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Texas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Phoenix. You know, they were way far away from home. Had I been younger, I might have would have done that. But since I was getting up in years, I kind of thought, well, that's a long way from family or anything. Mm-hmm. So I took my separation pay and thought, I'll get another job. Well, you can apply, but when you get up to where you're, I was over 55 by then and stuff.
Yeah.
They kind of hesitate on, they wonder whether you're going to be there long term.
Right,
or short-term.
Right. Yeah.
So I actually moved back home, and a friend talked me into moving back down there because she said, you're too smart on computers and everything. So I went back in 2008. I bet I interviewed for 30 jobs, and four or five of them I should have had, but I didn't get. So in 2010, I said, well, you know what? It's time to go home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for Belinda for sharing all that with us. It's very interesting. We really do appreciate it. I'm going to now pass it over to Bev. Bev, it's yours.
All right, I'm going to back up like I usually do. Let's go back and talk about your childhood a little bit. And you went to public school with these thick glasses on, and you accomplished a lot. because I know that is not easy. You know, the other kids and the teachers and trying to overcome some of these obstacles that you had to have had. Can you talk to us about that, what that was like for you?
Well, each year when I went to school as a child, my mother would have to go to school the first day and explain to these teachers that I needed to be sitting in the front of the room. Mm-hmm. And see, my biggest problem, even though I had low vision, was distance. If you mm-hmm. were standing in my living room now across the room and I was still had sight, I would not be able to see your facial features or anything to determine who you were. It's just I would know you by your stance or your hair color or, you know, something like mm-hmm. that. I couldn't see those small things. So when I went to school, I had to sit on the front row, and I hated it when the teachers loved to write on the blackboard.
Uh-huh.
Because I could not see that. I had to get up there and get up and walk up there and read what was written on the board, then go back and sit down and do what I was supposed to. So that was a problem, but I had that throughout the whole school. I only uh-huh. had one teacher that was very conscientious of what I had, and it was when I was a freshman. And the reason why is he went hunting with my brother, so he knew I had poor vision. He loved to write everything on the blackboard, but after he wrote it out, he had it mimeographed, and he brought me the copy. And I didn't
oh, good. Good.
Yeah. But when you went out and played, I had to be careful. I mean, I didn't see very well. And especially when they played games, you know, the teachers would take you out to play. You had teams, okay, team one and team two, and you chose, and the person who was head up chose who they wanted on their team.
Yeah.
I was usually the last person chosen because they knew I didn't do very well because I couldn't see.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and the people, you know, you had your glasses. Some made fun of you, but I had a lot of friends in school. They you know, it did mm-hmm. all right. But I just couldn't do a lot of things that the other kids could do. And I had to make when I went to high school, the physical ed teacher I had, she kind of insisted we do these things. And one day, standing out in the field, I nearly got hit in the face by a baseball.
Oh, wow.
And I looked back. Yes. Oh, they hollered at me to duck. If I hadn't have ducked, I'd have got hit by it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I walked back upstairs, and I told her, I said, Miss Hart, I will be glad to dress out every day, and I will be glad to do the calisthenics, and I'll be glad to take a shower when it's through, but I will not play these games any longer.
Yes.
I said, I'm sorry. I can't do it.
Yep.
Well, good for you for figure how to stand up for yourself, though, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, I get, and my sister-in-law, who used to be my sister-in-law back then, she was a senior, and she said, she can't see Miss Hart. She just can't see these things.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. And I understand that, you know, I wasn't legally blind in school, but my vision wasn't the best after sixth grade. And that depth perception's just not there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only driving I did in a car was, of course, everything in Marston was gravel roads. And, of course, the countryside. We'd drive around the countryside. It's when my sister learned how to drive. She would let me get behind the wheel, but she'd be sitting right beside me.
Uh-huh.
I'd drive slow, but that's all I learned because I knew I would never pass a driver's test.
Right, yeah.
Wow. Okay, after high school then, and you said you graduated and you helped out with your nephew.
Mm-hmm.
What about that period in, before you decided, I need to go to Lion's World? Or
well, see, I was still sighted then. I didn't start losing my sight till he was born 67, and then in 69 we built a new home, and we moved in it in 69. And I used to love to sit down, and I read a lot, and I liked to draw.
Oh.
And I used to like to draw a lot. And I would sit down and I would start to draw. And then all of a sudden, after about 30 minutes, things would start to blur. Or I'd sit down to read and things would start to blur. Well, here's the bad thing that happened. My mother ran a small Dairy Queen that was built on a truck, and she called it Mobile Queen. Well, she worked at the post office, and she ran this Dairy Queen. And I would tell her, I could tell, you know, that it was blurring on me. So, and I would tell my mother that, I said, Mama, I'm having some problems seeing. So, you know, things blur after a little while. And the response was, well, maybe your glasses need changing. Well, yes, obviously something needs changing. And I kept telling her that and telling her that, but she was really too busy to pay attention to what I was really saying, because she was always working or running that Dairy Queen. Till finally, my sister-in-law, Linda, and my sister, Karen, went up there and told her, you need to do something because she can't see. And so finally, that's when they decided to take me back to Memphis, and we went back to see the same doctor that I saw, and that's when they said I had glaucoma. So he did several tests and stuff, but nothing ever resulted out of that. And finally, I reached the point where after a year or so, I told her I wasn't going back anymore. I said, I've had enough of him, and he's not doing anything, and I'm not going back. So she went to a little local doctor there, and she was talking to him. I mean, we grew up as him being a local doctor, and she told him, she said, well, she won't go back. I can't go back. And he said, I don't blame her. He said, I wouldn't go back either.
Yeah,
he said, the doctor's too old. He has too many patients, and he's not up to date. He said, let me give you the name of a doctor in Cape Girardeau that you can take to. I got an appointment and got in to see him. He said, had I been there 6 months earlier, he probably could have done the surgery for glaucoma where they, you know, do the tunnel in your eye, and I might have had a little vision there. But as it was then, all he could do was, it's, I forget what it's called, but it's a freezing process where they stop the pressure of the glaucoma. So that's when I was down to the point that I could see shadows, and if a person was standing from me, and lights on in a room and stuff. And that's when, after seeing him, that's when the rehab counselors started seeing me and telling us about the place in Little Rock. And so we took a drive down there, my aunt and my uncle, my mom and dad, and I, we went down there. We went, cured the whole rehab center and everything, and talked to him, and hey, that was like in February of 75, and I was there on April the 21st of April as a client, so it didn't take me long to get into vocational rehab training.
Oh, that's great. You know, and not everybody knows of these resources that are out there. You know, it took me a while for rehab services. You know, but boy, because it said rehab services for the blind.
Yes. Well, this
and
was
at that time, I was low vision.
Oh, yeah. And this was a rehab training center for adults. It was not for...
I'm talking about when I was an adult, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
Same way with Missouri Council of the Blind, you know.
Yes.
And when I was low vision, I needed help with low vision things. So that's why I really like to reach out to others that are just experiencing some low vision problems and show them that there are resources that will help them. So that's good. You got to get some resources.
I was there for 10 months. It didn't take me long to learn Braille. I learned grade 1 and grade 2 Braille in 3 months' time. The thing that took me the longest, I told my parents when I went down there, I said, well, they might teach me mobility, but I'm not going downtown. Well, eat them words again. So it took me 10 months, but I learned, I had the best orientation and mobility instructor there was, and he taught me everything I needed to know. And I did it all. And then I even did the solo where I had to do it by myself. And, of course, he didn't send me where all of the other instructors sent their students. I usually sent them down to a used to be an old post office, but they had a vending stand in it so they could bring them back a candy bar to prove that they were there.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to catch the bus and go downtown, and he made me go to the First National Bank. And he told me, he said, when you go in the door, you need to turn to your right and follow along the wall till you get to the escalator. He said, go downstairs, and when you get downstairs, turn right, and there's a lounge there. He said, I'll be sitting in the lounge waiting for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But when I got down there, I sat down, I just broke down crying. He said, what's wrong? I said, I can't believe I did it.
But he had faith in you.
Yeah, after I finished crying, he said, well, I'm going to catch the van and go back to the center. He said, you find your way back to the bus. He said, I'll be sitting in Company Hall waiting on you when you get back.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, Melinda. Oh, my gosh.
So after I left that bank and I crossed the street, well, you know, a gentleman, he came up to me. He said, where are you headed? And I said, to the bus on 7th and Main. He said, I'm going that way. Would you like to take an arm? And I said, I would love to, but I know there's a mobility instructor standing on the corner here somewhere. Better do it myself. He said, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I knew that Barry was out there somewhere. He hadn't gone very far yet, you know.
Oh, wow. But temptation.
That's what took me the longest, because I was not a fast walker, but I mean, I was paying attention to what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to. You have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I took off with my cane in the town I live in to get down to my friend who was my hairdresser. And I wasn't paying any attention. I had something else on my mind, and the wind was blowing. And all of a sudden, I realized, wait a minute, the sound of that highway is on my right. It should be on my left. Where am I? And it took me a while, but boy, you got to pay attention.
Knowing my directions helped out a lot, because one of the first things he did when we were doing mobility around the center is he put me in the parking lot and he said, take hold of my arm, and he twisted me around and around and around and then he asked me, which direction are you facing?
Oh my gosh.
And I kept up with how he was turning me, and I'd tell him, and then he did it several times, and he said, that's good. He said, that will help you a lot. And of course, when I got downtown, yes, I got lost in the parking lots.
Yeah.
I hate them parking lots.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay, was your mobility instructor, was he visually impaired at all?
No. They were all sighted, because we went downtown for, once you got through your training there around the center, you got on a van with your, there were several trainees and instructors on the van, and they took you downtown and they parked in front of what we used to call the AP&L building. And then each instructor worked with their client, and they were all sighted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, the characteristic I'm seeing here, Chip, with Belinda is, she was strong-willed, she was determined, and she got the job done.
That's right.
My husband told me I was too independent.
Oh, is there such a thing as being too independent? Well, maybe.
No, he just told me, he'd met several blind or low-vision people in his job, that he, uh-huh. you know, carried around in a cab. And so when we were married and I would do all these things and cook dinner and everything and all that, and we'd be doing something, I'd say, he said, you're just too independent.
Oh, my gosh. Were you ever tempted just to go sit down and say, okay, you do it?
No, I said, because he'd say, well, you know, somebody else, I said, I lived alone before I met you. And I said, I can do it again. So
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of the way I feel, Linda, too, or Linda, that if I don't do it, who else is going to do it? You know,
that's right.
And it makes me feel good, even though it is like cleaning the gutters or doing mucky type work.
When I do that kind of work, I don't get out there and do that. So.
Well, I tell you what. It's like they're watching me with the ladder thing.
Yeah, I can understand.
And I try to use a little common sense, too. You know, that, this isn't. The wood ladder is lighter, but it's wobbly. So the metal ladder is so heavy, but it's sturdy. So if I get it in place and take that first step up and it doesn't feel right to me, I abandon it. You know, nope, this is not a smart thing to do. So.
Yeah. You have to be careful of all those. That's just like my nephew. And I was, you know, your family's a good one to tell you what you can and can't do. Or mostly what you can't do. But he bought one of these Blackstone griddles, but it's not the big outdoor one. It's one that is electric that you can use indoors or outdoors. But and I was kind of envious of him because I always liked to, my mother cooked on a griddle a lot of things, and I always thought they were neat. But I was asking him about it Saturday because he has his sitting in his utility room, so he cooks in the house. So I was asking him something about it Saturday, and he said, you aren't thinking about getting one of those, are you? And I didn't say nothing. I said, no, Billy. I did. I said, no. I said, I'm just asking you about it. He said, well, you can't operate it anyway. He said, it'd be too hard for you to cook on and operate. He said, besides the temperature gauge that you turn on it, it's digital. I said, remember, you had that. I had one time that sat on the counter and you used water underneath it. He said, you couldn't operate that one, so you wouldn't be able to operate this. And I said, okay. He doesn't know I bought one off QVC. And he doesn't have to know it. But it doesn't have a digital dial on it. So.
Now, is he going to listen to this interview?
No, he won't hear it.
Oh, here we got the true life story of Belinda Turner that's seen on Who's Who BLVCM. All right, Tim.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do, Belinda. We're going to put in a plug for your book. Talk to us about your book, the book that you have written.
Okay. All my life, after I got grown, I thought, you know, there are so many things that happens in a person's life. It would be real smart to keep a journal. And I thought, I wish I had done that. But I didn't, like most people don't. But one thing I do have, it's not photographic memory, but I have a very good memory. I don't forget much of anything. So several times I sat down to start to write a book. I thought, I'll write a book about my life. And I never could figure out how to get started. But during 2020, when COVID was going on and, you know, you couldn't do much of nothing, you couldn't even go to a restaurant and eat because everything was closed.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down one day in September and I just started writing. And just continued, and someone said, well, that's when the Lord intended for you to do it. And I guess that's right. I wrote on that book from September till the end of March of 21. And I'd even go to bed at night and some things would come to me and I'd get up and write them down so the next day I wouldn't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the book, and it's all about my entire life from the time I was a child and could remember things, which was about 3 years old, up until the end of March of 2021. And I told all about, it's divided into 12 parts. And the first part's called The Good Old Days. I told about growing up in the good old days of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
All the things that we could do that kids cannot do now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the dangers in the world. So I told all about that. And then once I got to high school, then I told about high school and then about losing my sight and going to vocational rehab and then working and then when I moved to Little Rock and all the different people that I came in contact with and what some people will do to you, they're just out of meanness or just, you know, you can't imagine what some people will do just to you. Mm-hmm. So about all the people I met and everything and the times I had to move and about my sister, well, my husband passing away and taking care of him. And my sister, when she passed away, I told it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's great. That's really, really great. Let me ask you, Belinda, writing your book, was that the motivation or the inspiration for you? You are the BLVCM newsletter editor. Did that help contribute to your wanting to take on that position?
Probably. So, you know, when Jeff asked, he asked about someone taking on that. He asked if anyone would want to volunteer, and nobody said anything. I'm sitting there thinking, yes, but I'm not going to say nothing tonight because I don't know what this entails. So I called him the next morning and asked him, and he and Tammy told me what they wanted. So I said, okay, I'll try it. We'll see how it goes. So that's what I do. I try to write about everything that we did that month, and hope I'm doing it all right. Tammy and Jeff said the other day that don't stop doing this. You're doing all right.
Yeah, good, yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's right. I tell you, I'm glad that you took on that position. I think it's a position that is well needed, keeping people updated, informed on what's going on in the organization. And there's no better way of really doing that other than putting together a newsletter. So we really appreciate you doing that, Belinda. You're doing a fine job, and we really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I try.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to tell you, Belinda, I've got to know you during the time the organization got started. You are such a delight. Isn't she, Bev? I love having you on our Christian fellowship meeting on Sunday afternoons and especially during our fun night. And it's amazing to me that when we put out the Mystery Artist of the Week, you're just right on top of it. You know?
I look forward to it. Well, see, here's the thing. I grew up with music. My mother and dad, they played their music every Sunday morning when they got up and they prepared their breakfast and stuff. They had their music going. So music came natural to us listening to it. But I probably, excuse me, took it on more than my brother and sister and really enjoyed it. And when the transistor radio came out and my dad bought one, well, guess who took the radio?
Mm-hmm.
Me. So, and I loved listening to music, and of course, Mom let us buy 45s, and once we got older, we'd buy albums. She had her music. She bought, she had all the Time Life Swing Era stuff, and, you know, music from that era, and of course, we thought we had to have every Elvis Presley record soundtrack from the movies he had, you know. And so I grew up with music, and music became just something I really loved. And my best collections of music is, since that's where I got started, is the 50s and early 60s. That's my most favorite. Old rock and roll, the early
50s. Yeah.
Early 60s. And then, of course, I got into country. Well, when you came from a small town, your radios there were not top 40 and stuff. They played everything on the station, you know, country and the old rock and roll mixed together and everything.
Right. Yeah.
So music is it. So every Saturday, I look forward to seeing who.
Yeah.
I couldn't even guess Saturdays, and I thought, dang, Wanda beat me to it, and I couldn't get the voice.
Yeah.
If that gets people to get on and read the email messages from BLVCM at 6 in the morning to be first in line.
Yeah.
Well, I am an early morning person. I do get up early. I'm a morning person more than I am an evening person. So,
not me, boy. You got me beat,
Well, I'm an early riser too, Belinda. So I'm right there with you. But you know, Belinda, you bring such a new and fresh dimension, you know, to all of the things that we do, and that's so exciting. You're one of the the last ones to leave when we do our fun nights. You know, you stick around and you can tell that you're really into this thing, man. You're really having a blast. You're enjoying it. And that people feed off of that enthusiasm that you bring. And it's really special. And we really do appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. I enjoy it.
I
like being around. I like being around people. I like being with people. And doing these things, I wish I could do more, but I'm not up there around y'all where I could join these.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here in Southeast Missouri.
Yeah.
Don't have transportation.
Right.
Just like the one thing I would love to do is go to the Lincoln County Fair when there's one in July, because it's in Troy, Missouri. And I used to have an aunt and an uncle and a couple of cousins that lived in Troy, Missouri.
Yeah.
We got to make that happen somehow. And you can always stay at Hotel Bev's here. I don't know how we're going to get from my house to Lincoln County Fair, but
Jeff tells me that it's really changed a lot from when, I mean, I used to go there in the 50s and 60s, late 60s, the last time I've been there. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's grown. He says it's really grown since then.
Yeah.
But, it's just something that would be interesting.
Sure.
But I like doing these kind of things.
Yeah,
you know?
My motto is do it while you can.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
The BLVCM I find to be so much more interesting, because just like we have the fun nights and the meeting and stuff, there are so many people that you learn their names of and you listen to and everything.
Right.
And you kind of meet, just like, I didn't know you, Chip, in the MCB. I met you at that last convention.
That's right.
I knew who Beverly was, but, you know, you don't see the people as much. So I just think it's really interesting.
But anyway, and we have the two peer support groups. We have one for sighted folks, and we have Bev's peer support group. And participating in those peer support groups, you really get to know people, and we talk about things that are not just of great interest but of great help and importance to people and maybe what they're going through.
And
that makes a world of difference when you can share these things with others. That's when I first started going to camp at Cobblestone. You know, we're all sitting on the front porch and we're comparing bruises. How'd you get that one? You ran into that wall too.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, we only have just a few minutes remaining. I'm going to push it back over to Bev. And Bev, you take us all the way back to the finish line.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I've never been known to talk too fast, but but I want to find out, and what the listeners will hear, what Belinda Turner's hobbies are. Besides writing books, I don't know where she gets time to do anything else.
Right now, I listen. What I do is I have my music library set up on my Echo, and I get up in the morning and I get on my treadmill and I listen to my music while I'm walking on the treadmill. I love to listen to my music. I play around or work on my Braille note. I consider that my computer. I love to talk on the phone. You know that, Beverly. I watch TV when there's something on that I want to see. And I just try to keep myself entertained throughout the day. Now, when I was younger, I used to love to go swimming. And
yes.
Good exercise.
Yes.
And I took dance lessons when I was working at the telephone company. A lady and I, we went and took dance lessons from Fred Astaire Dance Studios.
Oh, my gosh. Good for you.
Oh, man. I learned the foxtrot, which is very easy. I learned the waltz. I learned the swing. I learned the rumba. I learned the tango and the cha-cha-cha.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you still get up and...
No, I do remember when I was younger and I would go out with friends and there would be one guy in that group. You know, most people, when they slow dance, they just move around in a small
circle. Right.
And this guy waltzed all over the floor and I loved it. He said, "You're the only person I can dance with that can keep up with me." I said, "Keep it up. I love it."
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny, because I have memories of this guy. I was in a college town and he would go around and find these single ladies to get out and dance with, and we were all over the floor. You know, you did not stay in a circle, and whew,
that was a workout. It was fun.
Yes. But good for you for doing the dance lessons. Ah, and these are all that I wish I knew how to do, you know, because I watched American Bandstand.
I did too.
And try to follow them. Yeah.
I guess we all saw American Bandstand.
Yep.
Good old Dick Clark.
What would we do without Dick Clark? That's right.
And now I have discovered the old Johnny Carson Tonight shows on at 10 o'clock at night. Oh, my gosh. They are so funny. I love it. That simple humor. It's not disrespectful to anybody. You know, it's just
the way.
Fun.
Well, just like I watch INSP
channel. Yeah.
It's good old shows that we saw that were clean and they were westerns and whatever they had, but you know, I like watching it. So
yeah. Well, good. And then I know you read a lot too. Did you ever do any, what was typical for the females to do, the hand sewing or crocheting, knitting? Because you were supposed to sew everything.
Yeah, when I was in high school and I was in home economics, and we were going to start learning how to sew in the sophomore year, I had problems seeing it. So, I mean, I was, but I had to keep ripping out. Finally, I quit. I told her, I'm having too much problems trying to see this and get it straight, and I just wasn't doing real good at it. So I quit. Well, I told her, I said, I will listen to your classes and I will take your tests and everything, but I'm just not doing good at this. And of course, she'd have, you know, I'd have to rip it out several times. And finally, I just quit. You know, that teacher gave me an F because I wouldn't sew.
You're kidding. Oh, my gosh. You know, that's when you wish they could have something on their eyes to demonstrate what you're dealing with, too.
Well, you know, people should watch what they say, because later in life she lost her sight.
And wow.
I also had another lady. One time there was a trip going to Nashville on a tour bus, and I wanted to go. Well, the people who were running the tour bus, we knew. So I kind of wanted to go. And there were several things you were going to do in Nashville, and that's when they had Opryland. And so I wanted to go on this trip, but I used to run around with a few of these ladies in Marston. And my mother came home one day and told me what one of the ladies said. She said that she didn't really want you running around with them because she wasn't going to babysit and take care of you.
Wow.
I said, well, she doesn't really have to worry about it. And I did not. I knew I was staying with the wife of the guy who was driving the bus. But when we got out there, my mom took me out there to the hotel where the bus was picking us up. We ran into a lady that we knew, and she went over there and said, are you traveling with anyone particular? And she told her no, and she said, would you mind if Belinda kind of partnered up with you and y'all go see the site? She said, no, I'd love that. So I ran around with her. But the lady who made the statement, later years, she lost her sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you should watch what you tell people.
Yes.
Yeah. Chip, look at all these words of wisdom we're getting from Belinda.
Yeah.
Philosophy of life. So I think the listeners are really going to enjoy hearing what all Belinda has to say.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Belinda, we want to thank you so very much for being our guest here today on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community in Missouri. It's been absolutely great.
Well, thank you.
It has been. Thank you, Belinda.
You're welcome.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Bev and I to interview, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or Beverly Cascaden, or Bev, at 636-561-6947.
You never know. You might hear yourself next time right here on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Enjoy the rest of your week, everybody, and we'll catch you next time right back here. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.